Hi, I'm Neil Slade. Welcome to Tickle Your Amygdala and Brain Radar Radio. This show features my conversation with writer Robert Schneider from Sihanoukville, Cambodia. In this series, we talk about all things brain, but especially tickling the amygdala, self-control and stimulation of that master compass right in the middle of your brain. Your amygdala controls your emotions, not only the popularized circuits of negative emotion and fear, but more importantly, those feel-good emotions of pleasure and reward. And once you know how it works, you can turn on this part of your brain whenever you like, not just when you've won the lotto. I'm talking with Robert Schneider, who's calling me from Cambodia.
Yep.
How did you... Now, Robert, you joined my group in 2007, is that correct?
I joined your group in 2007, but I was thinking about it last night, and I believe I discovered you originally in 2003.
Oh, so you've been a member for pretty long, almost 10 years.
Yeah.
Nine years.
It was either 2002 or 2003, but somewhere around there, because I remember vividly... I think I've written to you about my early experiences, amygdala clicking, or as you say now, tickling.
Tickling. Yeah, well, I just looked at the... I just looked at two articles, one that you wrote recently, but one that went back to, I guess, must have been 2007. It was a very extended article that you posted online.
Yeah.
And then there was kind of like an update that you did a few years ago. So you had just discovered the website online, was that it, or did you hear one of the Art Bell programs?
No. It was a circuitous route. It was a funny little website. I don't know if it's still online or not. It was called the Little Purple Notebook. I forget the rest of it.
No, I'm not familiar. I'm not familiar with
and
that.
He mentioned another site, and I went to that site, and they gave you a brief mention. So I checked out your site. So it was a circuitous online route took me there.
Uh-huh.
I'd never heard of you before. I was living in Australia, and I didn't even know who Art Bell was.
Huh. Let me pause this just for a second, because Irfi and Chloe are having a wrestling match. Hey, guys, stop it. Just cool it, okay? Or I'm going to kick you out of the bedroom. All right. They're still puppies, so they're kind of rambunctious. And now... Chloe is cleaning out the inside of Irfi's mouth. You guys, I can't have a phone conversation when you're doing that. All right, hold on. I'm going to kick them out of my bedroom. All right, out. Come on. Get out of here. Out. Off the bed. Come on. Out. 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 Too distracting. Come on. Get out. Go play in the living room. Good. Tiger? Now we've got a cat who's hiding in here. All right, Tiger, go on. Hurry up. Out. All right, I need to concentrate when I'm talking to somebody on the other side of the globe. So you discovered it through a website, and I just need to know, how did you, now, where were you on in the globe when you made those, when you discovered it? Were you in the United States?
No, I was in Australia. Oh. I migrated from the U.S. to Australia in 1985.
And what brought you down there?
I married an Australian. We were living in San Francisco. Our son was born. And we just decided we'd rather raise him in Australia than the U.S.
So. Yeah, I can relate to that, sure. Okay.
Yeah.
And you were in Australia for how long?
20 years.
20 years. Now you're in Cambodia. How did you end up there?
First I got a divorce we divorced after 20 years, and I'd always wanted to live in a small country. I thought it was going to be Bali, but Bali was way overcrowded and overdeveloped, so I went looking and ended up here.
You
didn't care for Vietnam. I didn't care for Vietnam or Thailand, but Cambodia was in this nice transition stage, and so yeah, I just ended up here.
Is your wife from Cambodia? Because I heard a strange.
Yeah, name. Yeah, yeah.
At first, I thought I got the wrong phone number.
I gave you the wrong phone number.
I thought, what is this strange language? Well, I figured it was Cambodian, you know, but I didn't know if it was the operator or what. So, very interesting. What kind of work do you do? Two questions, just to set up a background. How old are you, and what kind of work do you do in Cambodia now?
I'm 63, and I now write content for different websites.
Oh, of course. Of course, because I put up a link to your websites, and it's for writers, correct?
Yeah, I have three. One of them's a writing one, and yeah.
Right.
So
I put those links up on my, on my website, on my friends page. So hopefully people will, migrate over there. And when I sell a million copies of this book, hopefully you'll get some of that traffic. So,
well, you've definitely already helped. I know that my cookbook site, which used to get very little traffic, really spiked. And now I'm getting 1,000 visitors a month, and before I was lucky to get 50 or 60.
Oh, well, that's
there.
That's fantastic. And I wanted to talk with you in particular for two reasons. Number one, you've been a member of the group for so long, but you've had some really interesting, I mean, it works for you. So I want to know if you can maybe describe what tickling your amygdala is like for you. How do you do it?
Oh, okay. Well, I anticipated this question.
Okay.
Yeah, I anticipated this question.
All right.
And I'll go back to the beginning, the first time I tried it. When I was in my early 20s, I studied yoga, in fact worked as a hatha yoga teacher and meditation leader at a retreat. So I had some background in that side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But then by the time I reached my 30s, I was over it. And by the time...
Hold on a second. I want to stop you right there. You said by the time you were in your 30s, you were over it. What do you mean?
Yeah.
And why did you...
Why was I over the yoga and meditation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. First, I became disenchanted with my guru, or supposed guru, and then I became disenchanted with the man who ran the retreat, and then I lived, and then... Basically, I didn't have a life because I was meditating so much, and that got in the way, and then I moved to San Francisco, and... started working.
Well, you didn't want to be like a yogi, essentially. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, essentially that. I wanted to have a life.
Life outside the yoga community.
Yeah, various other things. Everything changed during that era. That was the late 70s, early 80s.
People were starting to get away, during the 70s. People were kind of opening up to that spiritual thing, but then,
yeah, and then
it was a dead end for a lot of people.
And by the 80s, it turned into, like, Werner Erhard was big then in his EST thing, and it turned into this, that whole movement turned into kind of a, I don't know, hatha yoga became a way to get fit, meditation became... a business, the whole thing became just part of the whole business thing, and then people started wanting to play with their brains to, like, you're familiar with Werner Erhard.
Sure. Well, it was a big business for him.
Yeah, it was a big business, and it all turned in that direction, that instead of new, I don't know.
It turned into me.
Exactly. So I was just over it, and then, I started a family, and my life just I had to think about practical things.
Uh-huh.
And then in the 90s, late 90s, I started getting interested again. And anyway...
It was like the pendulum... The pendulum swung one way, and then it went the other way, and it sounded like, maybe you were looking for this middle ground, perhaps.
Well, that'd be it, yeah. By the time I stumbled, I was interested again, but with a more open mind, I was interested in exploring, so that probably helped me accept what you had to say.
Okay.
I was really interested in, because when I was meditating, I had extraordinary, a few extraordinary experiences that made me sure things like Kundalini and the chakras were real and all that stuff, yeah?
Uh-huh.
And other things, psychic phenomena and all of that stuff. I was sure it was real, but I was just over the making a lifestyle out of it, I guess, trying to explore that. I was looking for a middle ground, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know. But at any rate, I'd probably been looking online for about a year before I stumbled across your site and learned some interesting things. And anyway, then I came across your site and read about this amygdala, and I was impressed by the fact that you would teach this simple technique for free, and...
Well, I sure ain't a millionaire from it.
Well, and I was impressed, and I was a little dubious about the science at that time.
Okay.
It was so easy to do the technique, I decided to try it. It just happened to be at a time, at the absolute lowest time of my working life. I had had my own business until 1994 as a making custom furniture, and then and then I had to give that up because of a bad back injury. And then just about the time I stumbled across your site, I had lost a decent paying job just overnight and had to go work in this horrible factory. They made multi-million dollar yachts, which sounds interesting, but it was just an absolute hole.
Huh.
And that's the first time in my life I was like chronically depressed, not clinically, but chronically depressed. Like, I've screwed up my whole life.
Okay.
And it was just about that time. It had to be right about almost exactly that time. Otherwise, because I remember vividly reading about amygdala clicking and trying it, you know, now and then. And, that does make me feel mildly better. I could definitely, even just the first few times I did it, I could feel a slight release from pressure.
Uh-huh.
But nothing extraordinary.
Okay.
And one day I was driving to work, and this is like 5:30 in the morning. It's freezing cold, and I was looking forward to going into this even colder, massive factory where the smell of chemicals was everywhere and the air was thick with fiberglass dust. And the crew did charming things, like when they get in a fight, one guy stapled another guy's hand to it. to the deck of the boat.
Oh, good God.
This place was so bad that in Australia, if you're on the dole or on welfare, you have to look for a job and report, right?
Yeah.
You can find a job, you have to take it. This place was so bad that the people said, no, you don't have to take that job.
Oh, God. I'm sorry to laugh, but it is... It's the way you tell it, Robert.
it was the only job that I could get in an instant, and I needed, and I was broke, and we had mortgage and everything. It was a terrible time.
Yeah.
So anyway, one day I'm driving along, thoroughly depressed, and I did a little amygdala click and became completely blissed out. The freezing cold air felt invigorating, and when I got to the horrible workshop, I thought, wow, this place is fascinating. It's really interesting. And
you weren't taking any drugs, correct?
No drugs whatsoever, but God, it was as if I'd taken a very strong one. It was that big a change.
Uh-huh.
And that persisted for a good 6 or 8 months, I guess.
Oh my goodness. So you're talking about a permanent.
Every time I'd click forward, I'd get on a big high.
Wow.
That job ended after 3 months. I went to a similar job but much better conditions, and it was just quite extraordinary. Then it tapered off. Things got fairly normal, but after that, things went from in my personal life things went from bad to worse.
Mm-hmm. Despite the clicking.
In terms of my outside personal life, things went from bad to worse.
Okay.
Got noticed that my dad was dying, so I had to go quickly to America. Fortunately, he had enough money in the bank that I could afford to, because I didn't. And I had to stay there for 3 months, take care of him until he died.
Well, I have to ask you I have to ask you this. So you were able to click your amygdala forward or tickle it forward, mm-hmm. and it improved your internal emotional state, yep. correct?
Yeah.
In
yeah.
spite of the fact that this external circumstances became more and more difficult.
Yeah.
So it was like two different things. It was like you were not affected by... I mean, it's you were not affected by the disintegration of what most people would consider a good life or good relationships or whatever it was. You were still being able to maintain a equilibrium and a positive outlook, even though things were just falling apart. Is that accurate?
Literally falling apart around me. You put it exactly right. I was able to maintain equilibrium and a positive frame of mind, even though my whole life was falling apart. When I came back to Australia, the first thing my wife did was announce that she wanted a divorce after 20 years.
Uh-huh.
And then she moved out of the house and left me with... I'm not saying this to disparage her. This is just what happened, okay?
Yeah.
Then she moved out, and I was absolutely stunned. And yes, there were some times when I got really freaked out about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it never overwhelmed me. I never, you know, just, okay, this is what's happening. I've got to deal with it. So she moved out, and my daughter was just finishing high school, so I took care of her, dealt with all that. And, you know, I know for a fact, had all this happened and I had not learned this absolutely ridiculously simple technique, I wouldn't have handled it nearly as well. I don't know if I would have fallen apart or not, but I certainly wouldn't have handled it the way I did.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's hard to explain. Just
well, you've explained it well. I think so. One thing that people, you know, we naturally do is we think that the good feelings that we have inside our brain are dependent upon external circumstances.
Mm.
And, you know, I mean, that's the tendency. And I think that is a cultural brainwashing.
Yeah, yeah.
The how good you feel, I mean, you know, is not how much money you have or the job, you know, I mean, obviously if you're, I think, you know, your example is really extraordinary. I mean, obviously, if you're doing a job you hate, you're not going to be happy. But you had a job that you previously thought you hated or you did hate, and you click this switch in your brain, and suddenly you perceive that job in an entirely different light and in a way that you were able to get something positive out of it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And, you know, and people think, well, if I have a, you know, if I've got the perfect mate, if I got a beautiful wife or a handsome husband, and I've got a new car that runs perfectly, and I live in a big house, and blah, 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 then I'll be happy.
Yeah. Well,
but that's an illusion.
Then I'll be happy. Yeah.
You've brainwashed yourself into thinking that's how it works, and your story is a complete exception to that in a remarkable way.
I think it is, actually.
It is. There's no question.
And I can say that without bragging, because it was simply, it was just that slip, that simple little slip. And this is what's so extraordinary to me, is that happened. There wasn't anything subtle about it that first time, but it was just a complete change outlook. Of course, since then, it's not that extraordinary, but I can see this happen all the time, even to this day, when, I'll get a little bit down about being in a rut at work, you know, like, and then just kind of flick. I call it flicking sometimes, if that works for me. But
whatever you want to call it, it's okay with me.
Flip forward, just take that little leap, and another point of perspective appears. Sometimes it's, oh my God, I'm in Cambodia. Most all expats here are broke, and I've actually made a life for myself here. I mean, they drop like flies around here. Or maybe it's just a bit looking at it from a different angle, or like yesterday, I went for a bike ride. It just, I can take a two-hour break. I'll go for a bike ride. Little things like that, you know, sometimes.
Uh-huh.
Just getting out, it helps you get out of a rut sometimes and see things in a different light or do something different. It's hard to explain, but when it happens, it's easy. Something, I don't know, there's some internal mechanism there that if you listen to it, will help you do the right thing for you at that moment in time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, and it seems like it's just a mechanism. That's why I think it's such an extraordinary technique. It doesn't depend on this long, involved self-analysis. You can do that too, by the way, but it doesn't necessarily involve long, involved self-analysis or sitting down for an hour meditating or taking an antidepressant or something. It just involves clicking a switch.
A simple act of will.
Yeah.
End of part one with Robert Schneider. The book Tickle Your Amygdala, which you can find at brainradar.com, contains 52 different ways in which people turn on the pleasure and reward circuits of the amygdala. Tickling the amygdala is not just your imagination or pretend game. When you think about tickling your amygdala, you are actually activating neurocircuits inside your brain. This can be seen and verified using brain scanning machines, as has been done at Harvard University and other brain laboratories around the world. Well, that's it for this episode. Until next time, keep tickling your amygdala.